Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we take your curiosity, dive into the sources, and bring in expert insights to really unlock some fascinating topics. And today, wow, we are jumping into something that's generating a ton of buzz, especially in health circles, human optimization. We're talking about peptides. You've asked about this one, so we went straight to the source material studies, expert interviews to unpack the science, the history, and frankly, the incredible potential of these tiny signaling molecules. We're going to explore how they're being used for, well, almost everything it seems, accelerating injury recovery, boosting brain function, maybe even extending our healthy lifespan. So get ready. This might really shift how you think about what's possible with health. Before we really get into it, just a quick heads up. This deep dive is brought to you by InfinityPeptide.com.
It really is remarkable, isn't it, how quickly the understanding and just the accessibility of peptides are changing. Our source material today, which includes a really comprehensive interview with a leading expert, Jay Campbell, is going to be super helpful. It helps us cut through all the noise online and focus on the actual signal. So we'll clarify what peptides actually are, you know, how they work biologically, and I think most importantly, why they might actually matter to your personal health journey.
Okay, so our mission today is pretty clear then. We want to give you a solid, comprehensive understanding of peptides, arm you with some, frankly, surprising facts, and really help you see the implications, the potential for your own health, your longevity. Right, let's unpack this. #tag1. What exactly are peptides, the scientific foundation? Okay, start right at the beginning. For anyone who's maybe hearing this term float around but isn't totally sure, when we talk about peptides, what are we actually referring to, scientifically speaking?
Right, good place to start. At their core, peptides are basically signaling molecules. You can kind of think of them as fractionated proteins, or maybe easier, just short chains of amino acids linked together.
Okay, short chains of amino acids, like building blocks of proteins, but smaller.
Exactly. And the key distinction that our source highlights is about the length. So typically you find shorter chains, maybe only 4 or 5 amino acids in oral-based peptides. Those are often designed for more localized effects, maybe in the gut. Whereas the longer chains, like BPC-157 is a popular one that's maybe 15 to 20 amino acids long, those tend to form the basis of the injectable peptides. And those longer ones, generally, they have a more systemic potent effect throughout the body because they survive longer and travel further. So yeah, not full proteins, but these really precise functional fragments carrying specific messages.
Got it. Precise messages. So where do they come from? Does our body make them naturally, or are these things purely cooked up in a lab?
Well, that's a really important point, actually. They are found organically in the human body, that BPC-157 I just mentioned. Your body actually makes that in your gastric juice. It plays a role in gut health naturally.
Interesting.
But for therapeutic use, you know, the kind of applications we're talking about today, specific healing, optimization, higher doses, they are synthesized by chemists in a lab. Essentially, scientists use human cells as a blueprint. They figure out the specific amino acid sequence, and then they synthesize larger quantities of it.
Okay.
So they're replicating what the body already does, but amplifying it to get a therapeutic effect that goes way beyond our normal natural production levels.
So it's like taking the body's own communication system and just tuning up the volume on specific signals.
That's a great way to put it, yeah. Amplified and targeted.
Okay, now here's where I think it gets really interesting, comparing them to, you know, standard medications that most of us are familiar with. How do they stack up?
Precisely. And this is where peptides seem to offer a really distinct advantage over many conventional pharmaceutical drugs. Our source material, particularly Jay Campbell, really emphasizes this point. Many traditional synthetic drugs, he calls them petroleum distillate medications, meaning derived from petroleum through chemical processes, they often create side effects.
Right, the dreaded side effect list.
Exactly. And the reason, he argues, is that as they break down at the tissue level, they can leave behind this kind of unintended residue, which can trigger other reactions, cause problems. Peptides, on the other hand, and also this related category called bioregulators, mainly from Russia, they generally don't cause these systemic side effects. Why? Because they break down into inert, harmless substances.
Yeah, inert. Meaning?
Meaning they don't really react further. The body just uses those leftover amino acids or other component for normal processes, or just excretes them easily. No lingering residue causing trouble. It's a much cleaner interaction, biologically speaking.
That sounds like a huge plus.
It is. And what's also fascinating is their targeted action. Many peptides are tissue specific. So they're designed very precisely to target and work within one particular biological system or organ. A peptide for cartilage repair, for example, will primarily act on cartilage cells. It doesn't just flood the whole system indiscriminately.
Unlike some drugs that seem to affect everything.
Exactly. And that really stands in stark contrast to many conventional medications, which often have broader systemic effects. And you know, sometimes you even get drugs prescribed just to manage the side effects of other drugs.
Yeah, the prescription cascade.
Right. It creates this cycle of dependency. People end up taking handfuls of pills just to counteract the problems caused by the first one. Peptides offer a much more precise, cleaner, almost elegant way to influence specific biological processes, delivering the message without all the static, hashtag tech, hashtag to your team, a brief history, and the current landscape of peptides.
Okay, so it sounds like peptides, scientifically, have been understood for a while. But for most of us, honestly, they feel like a pretty new thing, like they just burst onto the scene recently. What's the real story there? What's their journey been like?
Yeah, that's a common perception, but the history is actually far more extensive than most people realize. Jay Campbell, our expert source, he gives some great personal context here. He mentions he's been personally using peptides since way back in 2004.
Wow, 2004, that's almost 2 decades.
Exactly. That predates the current buzz by a long shot. And even more striking, he says he started learning about them 26 years ago. Around the same time, he was really deep into studying hormones.
So this isn't just a recent fad for him.
Not at all. And you have to remember, this is someone who wrote the number one and number two best-selling books ever on hormone and testosterone optimization. His interest isn't superficial. It's built on decades of personal use and really deep research. It gives him a unique perspective on how this field has evolved.
Okay, that's significant. And apparently, it's not just a Western thing either, right?
Yeah.
The history goes further back and elsewhere geographically.
Absolutely. If we broaden the view, look at the bigger picture, the source material is quite revealing. It shows that the Russians and the Bulgarians, they've actually been utilizing peptides and these related compounds, bioregulators, since the late 1940s, early 1950s.
The 40s and 50s.
Seriously.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Especially for their athletes, you know, performance enhancement, recovery, often done quite secretively, of course, during the Cold War era and beyond. We're talking about over 60 years of research from those regions. And now, with modern tools like AI translation, a lot of that data is becoming more accessible to the West.
60 years of research we're just tapping into now.
Pretty much. It points to this long, kind of clandestine history of performance enhancement and optimization that was happening completely outside of mainstream Western medicine for decades. They were exploring these tools long before we really caught on. It shows how knowledge can develop in parallel, sometimes hidden tracks.
Okay, so if they were around for so long, used by athletes in Russia, known by experts like Jay Campbell, how did peptides suddenly become this huge mainstream topic, seemingly overnight? What caused that shift?
Right, that's the key question about the market evolution, especially just in the last, say, 2 years. Jay Campbell actually describes it as a renaissance. Several factors seem to have pushed peptides into the mainstream. You have public figures like RFK Jr. talking about them openly. And there's also, according to the source, this perceived kind of widespread need for healing solutions, maybe particularly in the wake of the pandemic and vaccine discussion.
Okay. Increased visibility and maybe increased demand.
Exactly. But this rapid growth, while exciting in one way, has created a huge problem. Jay calls it a terrible signal-to-noise ratio,
Meaning?
meaning there's just so much misinformation swirling around now. It's incredibly difficult for the average person to figure out what's real, what's science-backed, and what's just, you know, hype or completely wrong.
Yeah, you see that everywhere online.
Totally. Jay estimates, and this is pretty stark, that maybe 95% of the people talking about peptides online lack any real deep understanding. They're often just regurgitating stuff they heard somewhere else without any genuine insight or experience. He even points to things like plant-based peptides as an example of what he calls the current laughing stock in the space. It highlights how much bad info is out there.
Wow, 95%. That's concerning.
It is. And it leads to another issue, the magic bullet trap. Many newcomers, unfortunately, they hear about peptides and think it's the simple standalone fix for everything.
Right, take this pill, fix everything.
Exactly. They don't understand the nuances, the importance of proper dosing, the critical role of foundational health like diet, sleep, exercise. Peptides work with your biology. They don't replace healthy habits. So this often leads to disappointment when they don't get miraculous results overnight. And that, unfortunately, can tarnish the reputation of the whole field.
So it's gone from this sort of gray area research chemical space.
Right, where it was technically legal for self-research, but not FDA approved for clinical use.
To being everywhere, but filled with potential pitfalls and bad information.
Precisely. It makes finding reliable sources and understanding the real science absolutely crucial. Hashtag tag 3. How do we use them? Delivery systems and dosage.
Okay, so we have this huge range of peptides, different potential uses.
Yeah.
How do people actually take them? When you hear peptides, I think most people immediately think injections. Is that the main way?
Yeah, that's definitely the common association, and for good reason. Our source clarifies that for most systemic effects, meaning effects throughout the whole body, the highest impact delivery system is indeed injectable.
Why is that? Just gets in faster.
Basically, yes. It's about bioavailability and speed. Injection allows the peptide to bypass the digestive system entirely, cross the blood-brain barrier more readily if needed, and enter what's called portal circulation, the main highway of your bloodstream, the fastest. This direct, swift entry means more of the active compound gets where it needs to go, making it the most effective method for maximizing the therapeutic potential for those broad systemic effects.
Okay, injectable is king for systemic impact. But I've definitely heard about other forms. What about those? Are they useful?
Oh, absolutely. While injectables might be top tier for hitting the whole system hard and fast, other delivery methods definitely exist and have their own specific advantages and uses. It really depends on the peptide, the goal, and where you need it to act.
Like what?
Well, you can take peptides intranasally. Often comes as a mist you spray up your nose. This allows absorption through the nasal passages, which can be a good route for getting things potentially straight to the brain, bypassing the blood-brain barrier to some extent.
Interesting, like for cognitive peptides.
Potentially, yes. Then there's inhalation breathing it in, which gets it into the lungs and systemic circulation that way. And transdermal application, so using creams or serums. That allows for localized absorption through the...
Creams and serums?
Yeah.
Like for skin stuff?
Exactly. Great for skin rejuvenation, maybe promoting collagen, or even for hair regrowth directly on the scalp. Think GHK2, which we'll talk about later.
Right. And what about pills? Oral peptides?
Oral peptides are available, yes. But currently, their effectiveness for systemic issues is, well, somewhat limited. The main hurdle is something called first-pass metabolism.
First-pass metabolism?
Yeah. When you swallow something, it goes through your digestive system, primarily the liver, before it hits your main bloodstream. And digestive enzymes, liver enzymes, they can break down the peptide, rendering a lot of it inactive before it can get out to the rest of the body.
So less bang for your buck systemically.
Generally, yes, for systemic effects currently. However, oral peptides can be very effective for issues within the gut itself. Think BPC-157 orally for things like SIBO, gut inflammation, leaky gut, dealing with pathogens right there in the digestive tract. It works locally.
Okay, so good for the gut, less so for, say, a shoulder injury if taken orally.
Exactly. For that shoulder, you'd want an injection to get it systemically. But it's important to add, the technology for oral delivery is constantly improving. Scientists are working on ways to protect the peptides or enhance absorption, so we might see more effective systemic oral options down the line. It's an evolving area.
Got it. Okay, so delivery varies. What about frequency? How often are people typically using these? Is it like a daily vitamin or?
It really varies quite a bit, depending on the specific peptide and what you're trying to achieve. There's no single answer. For most injectable peptides used for general optimization or longer-term goals, the guidance from our source is typically taking them at least 5, maybe 6 days a week. This helps maintain consistent levels in the body.
5 or 6 days a week.
Okay. Now, if you're talking about the growth hormone agonist peptides, the ones designed to stimulate your own natural GH production, those usually require daily administration. That consistency is key for getting the optimal sustained effect on GH levels.
Daily for GH peptides. Makes sense.
But then for peptides focused more specifically on, say, healing from an injury or maybe boosting cognitive function, you might only need to inject those 2 or 3 times a week.
Less frequent for those.
Often, yes. And then there's the acute injury scenario. If you have a really bad acute injury, like a significant tear or sprain, and you're using the heavy hitters like BPC-157 and TB-500 for rapid healing, the protocol might involve injecting them twice a day, at least initially, until that severe inflammation starts to subside. You hit it hard and fast.
Twice a day for bad injuries.
Wow. Yeah, it's about maximizing that initial healing response.
Yeah.
And the injection itself, you know, it's much less daunting than people often imagine. You're typically using incredibly fine needles, like a 31 or 32 gauge, sometimes tiny 4 millimeter needles, very little discomfort.
Okay, tiny needles, that helps.
And what's really been a game changer for convenience, Jay Campbell really highlights this, is the development of these modern medical grade pens.
Like insulin pens.
Exactly like that concept. They allow you to load cartridges and inject multiple peptides potentially at once, dialing in the dose. It significantly speeds up the process compared to the old way of reconstituting powders and vials, drawing up into syringes. It was cumbersome.
Right, that sounds like a hassle.
It was. These pens use cartridges that can last an individual user maybe 4 to 5 months. It makes that daily or semi-daily regimen much less of a chore, much more sustainable long-term. Convenience is key for adherence.
Okay, we've got the basics down, what they are, the history, how you take them. Now let's get into the really exciting part. What can these peptides actually do? We keep hearing about these main areas: healing, performance optimization, and longevity. Let's start with healing, because some of the claims there sound, well, almost unbelievable.
They do sound incredible, and the healing potential is genuinely profound. It's probably the number one reason people first get interested in peptides. They've got an injury that won't heal, or they want to recover faster. Yeah. And we're not just talking minor improvements here. It can be dramatic acceleration. Let's break down some key players.
Okay, let's hear it.
All right, first up, the big one, BPC-157. That stands for Body Protective Compound 157. Think of this one as, like, the master conductor of your body's repair crew. Yeah, its main mechanism is significantly increasing angiogenesis. That's the formation of new blood vessels. More blood vessels mean dramatically boosted blood flow, red blood cells, lymph flow, soft tissue fluid. Even crucial growth factors like IGF get delivered more efficiently right to the damaged area.
So it rebuilds the supply lines for healing.
Exactly. It lays the groundwork. And the result is accelerated healing of pretty much any soft tissue injury cuts, deep wounds, ligament tears, muscle strains, sprains. It's so effective, it often gets nicknamed the Wolverine healing protocol.
Wolverine, right, like the X-Men character. Because it's so fast.
Precisely. It helps the body regenerate tissue at an almost uncanny speed. BPC-157 doesn't just patch things up, it helps rebuild the fundamental circulatory infrastructure for deep, lasting repair.
Okay, BPC-157 for rebuilding. What else?
Then you've got TB-500 or thymosin beta-500. This one works differently, but complements BPC perfectly. Its main job is suppressing inflammation.
Inflammation control. Crucial for healing.
Absolutely critical. Too much inflammation hinders the repair process. TB-500 effectively dials down that excessive inflammation, creating a much more favorable environment for the body's natural repair mechanisms to work efficiently without being swamped.
So BPC builds, TB-500 calms the site down.
You got it. And that's why the real magic often happens when you use them together, the power duo. BPC-157 plus TB-500. Using these two in combination isn't just additive, it seems synergistic. It can accelerate healing by, get this, 7 to 10 times.
7 to 10 times faster.
That's what the source material suggests, based on anecdotal reports and clinical observations. Jay gives a great example. A healthy 30-year-old tears their distal bicep tendon. Normally, that's maybe a 4 to 6 month recovery, right? With diligent BPC and TB-500 use, they could potentially be fully recovered in just 6 to 8 weeks.
That is game changing. 6 weeks instead of 6 months.
It completely redefines recovery timelines for many soft tissue injuries. Truly remarkable.
Okay, wow. What else is in the healing toolkit?
Next up, let's talk about copper peptide, GHKCU. This is another powerful peptide, also known for being angiogenic, stimulating that crucial new blood vessel growth. So it aids general healing, wound repair. But GHKCU is particularly famous as a rejuvenation peptide, especially for skin health. It's widely used, often topically, to help reduce fine lines, wrinkles, improve skin elasticity, firmness, and overall tone, basically helping the skin look and act younger.
The rejuvenation peptide. I like the sound of that.
Right. And beyond cosmetics, it also has applications for hair regrowth. You can use it as a topical serum directly on the scalp to stimulate follicles. You might notice it sometimes has this distinctive bluish-purple color that's characteristic of the copper complex.
Okay, GHKCU for skin and hair.
Yeah, interesting.
Any others?
Yes, there's a newer, apparently very profound one, especially for cartilage, Cartilax. This is technically a Russian bioregulator, a slightly different class, but functions similarly as a signaling molecule. Cartilax specifically targets cartilage repair, and crucially, it seems to regenerate the nerve fiber bundles around the cartilage too, which could be huge for pain associated with cartilage damage.
Cartilage repair?
Yeah.
That's notoriously difficult.
Exactly. That's why this is expected to be a major mover and shaker, particularly for older folks dealing with osteoarthritis, that wear and tear damage. It offers real hope where options have been limited.
So if you combine these...
Right, imagine stacking them. The ultimate healing blend, BPC, 157, TB500, GHKCU, and Cartilax together. For soft tissue injuries, this comprehensive stack could potentially accelerate healing by an astonishing 12 to 15 times. It shows the power of hitting multiple pathways synergistically.
12 to 15 times.
Incredible, right? But there's an important caveat here. These peptides we've discussed, they primarily excel at soft tissue tendons, ligaments, muscle, cartilage, skin. They are unlikely to significantly stimulate new bone growth or speed up bone fracture healing. That involves different biological processes.
Okay, good distinction. Soft tissue superheroes.
Pretty much. And beyond injury repair, there are peptides for immunity and even emergencies. Thymosin alpha-1, TA1, is a potent immunomodulator. It helps regulate and strengthen your immune system, making it more resilient. Jay Campbell mentions using it before and after flying, for instance, to ward off illness.
Proactive immune support.
Exactly. Then there's LL37. This one's described as a broad-spectrum antipathogenic antimicrobial knockout peptide. It's generally reserved for when you're really sick, dealing with severe infections, or what the source calls potential bioweapon bullshit. Basically serious, hard-to-treat bugs. It's a big gun.
Okay, reserve that one for emergencies.
Definitely. And finally, VIP, vasoactive intestinal peptide. This can be inhaled nasally or injected. Its main effect is massively opening up airways. So incredibly useful for severe sinus blockages, maybe asthma attacks, situations where you need to restore breathing quickly. Powerful tools for critical moments.
Wow. Okay, this really brings up a massive question, especially thinking about injuries like torn ligaments or meniscus tears. If these peptides can heal soft tissue that much faster, could they genuinely be an alternative to surgery sometimes?
This is precisely where things get really interesting and potentially disruptive for traditional healthcare. It raises, as the source puts it, a growing moral dilemma for orthopedic surgeons.
A moral dilemma? How so?
Well, consider an older individual, maybe 45 or older, who tears their ACL or meniscus. Traditionally, surgery is often the default recommendation. But now, with peptides, perhaps combined with other regenerative therapies like PRP or stem cells, they might be able to achieve healing that is comparable or potentially even better than surgery.
Better than surgery.
One key factor mentioned is tensile strength. When a surgeon reattaches a ligament in an older person, the repaired tissue might not regain its original full strength. Peptides, by encouraging the body to rebuild its own natural tissue matrix, might result in a stronger, more resilient repair long-term for that age group.
That's a crucial point. And then there's the cost.
Oh, the financial implications are staggering. An ACL surgery, easily $100,000 all in, maybe more. The surgeon might make $40,000, $50,000, plus hospital fees, insurance profits. It's a massive industry.
Right.
Compare that to a peptide protocol, a course of BPC 157, TB500, GHKCU, Cartilax, might cost the patient maybe $600, $700 total. If that protocol can achieve similar or better healing for that soft tissue injury naturally without the risks, the long rehab, the huge cost, you see the dilemma.
Yeah, it's stark. Yeah. Especially if the outcomes are potentially better.
Exactly. Jay Campbell mentions an orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Elizabeth Yurth, who apparently finds it increasingly difficult ethically to just default to recommending these major surgeries for older patients when these incredibly effective, non-invasive alternatives exist. It really highlights this clash between the old sick care model and the emerging optimization healthcare approach. Mm. You might have powerful choices beyond the scalpel.
That's truly profound for orthopedics. What about other really common issues, like hair loss? Does this peptide understanding change how we view that?
It absolutely does. It challenges some long-held beliefs. The prevailing idea that hair loss is almost entirely due to DHT, dihydrotestosterone damaging follicles, our source material largely dismisses that as the primary driver.
Really? Not DHT? That's like the main thing everyone talks about.
Right. But Jay Campbell argues, quite convincingly, that the fundamental cause of most age-related hair loss is actually blood flow restriction to the scalp.
Restricted blood flow.
Yes. Think about it. Factors like heavy metal toxicity building up over time, maybe excessive sun exposure, damaging scalp tissue, EMF exposure, and crucially, poor diet leading to microvascular inflammation. All these things can constrict the tiny blood vessels feeding the hair follicles. They get starved of oxygen and nutrients.
So the follicles die off due to lack of supply.
Essentially, yes. So the solution then becomes about restoring that vital circulation. And guess what helps with blood flow and vessel growth?
Peptides, like GHKCU.
Bingo! GHKCU is key here because it's angiogenic. Combine that with maybe simple mechanical things like inversion therapy, hanging upside down briefly to physically push blood to the head, and using things like red light therapy caps, which stimulate cellular energy in the follicles. With this combined approach addressing the root cause circulation, people can apparently see significant hair regrowth, even if they have a genetic predisposition like male pattern baldness. It's about feeding the follicles again.
Wow, so it's not just accepting hair loss, it's potentially reversible by fixing the blood flow. That's a totally different paradigm.
It really is. It shows how understanding the underlying mechanism opens up new, potentially much more effective solutions.
Okay, moving beyond healing and visible anti-aging, let's talk performance, body optimization. What tools do peptides offer here for maybe building muscle, losing fat, improving energy?
Right. This is another huge area of interest. For performance and body optimization, we're mainly looking at two key categories according to our source: growth hormone agonist peptides and mitochondrial optimizing peptides. Different tools for different aspects of performance.
Okay, GH agonists first. What do they do?
So these peptides work by encouraging your body to produce and release more of its own natural growth hormone. They don't replace GH, they just stimulate your pituitary gland to make more, usually in a more natural, pulsatile way.
And the benefit of more natural GHs.
Well, GH has a wide range of effects: increased fat burning, lipolysis, potential muscle growth, especially if combined with resistance training and adequate protein hormones, improved skin elasticity, better sleep quality, faster recovery.
Sounds pretty good. Which peptides are we talking about here?
Several key ones. Tesamorelin, which also goes by the brand name Grifta. This one's actually FDA approved, originally for HIV patients with lipodystrophy, that really stubborn, hard, visceral belly fat. But it turns out it's highly effective at shredding that kind of belly fat in healthy people too, very targeted fat loss.
Interesting, FDA approved.
Yeah. Then probably the most well-known and widely used is apomorelin, often called IPA. It's popular because it's considered very gentle, with arguably the fewest side effects. It mimics the body's natural GH release patterns really well, so it doesn't tend to shut down your own production.
IPA, okay. Heard of that one.
And another strong one is CJC1295. It's definitely potent at stimulating GH release, but some users report side effects like facial flushing or a feeling of nausea right after injecting. So while effective, it might be less comfortable for some compared to IPA or tesamorelin.
So flushing nausea potential with CJC.
Got it. Right. But overall, all three, tesamorelin, IPA, CJC1295, can help improve natural GH levels, leading to those benefits. Better skin, deeper sleep, enhanced fat loss, especially if your diet is dialed in, and potentially some muscle building support, particularly if someone is also optimizing their testosterone or other hormones.
Makes sense. Any caveats?
Yes, an important one regarding age. If someone is older, say late 50s, early 60s, and their natural IGF-1 levels, which is a marker for GH activity, are already very low, these agonist peptides might have limited effectiveness. They need some baseline function to stimulate.
So they can't boost something that's barely there.
Pretty much. In those cases, actually using microdoses of real human growth hormone, HGH, might be more effective. And importantly, the cost of HGH has come down significantly. A year's supply in a convenient pen form might be around $4,500 now, making it much more accessible than it used to be.
Okay, good to know about the age factor and HGH as an alternative. And what about the other category, mitochondrial optimizers? Sounds fundamental.
It really is. Mitochondria are the power plants of your cells, right? They produce ATP, the energy currency your body runs on. Mitochondrial optimizing peptides work to make those power plants run more efficiently, boosting cellular energy production and overall vitality.
So more energy at the cellular level.
Exactly. Jay Campbell's personal favorite here is SS31. He calls it an amplifier peptide. It optimizes how your mitochondria function, but it also seems to amplify cellular signaling cascades.
Meaning
you might get more effect from less of other things. For example, you might need less therapeutic testosterone or less growth hormone to achieve the same results because SS31 is making your cells more sensitive and efficient in using those signals. It makes everything work better.
Wow, an amplifier. That's powerful.
It is. Then there's MOTSC, similar in strength to SS31, but apparently particularly beneficial for individuals who are maybe heavier or metabolically deranged, meaning their metabolism isn't firing on all cylinders, perhaps due to inflammation or excess body fat.
Who does MOTSC help them?
It really helps turn on the mitochondria, giving a noticeable energy boost for training. It can help overcome that lack of motivation that often comes with being overweight or inflamed, providing the energy needed to get moving and start improving metabolic health, like a kickstart for the cellular engines.
That sounds incredibly useful for a lot of people.
Definitely. And lastly, there's 5-amino, sometimes called 5-amino-1-MQ. This one can be taken orally or injected, though injectable might be more potent systemically. It also enhances mitochondrial optimization and power output. Users often report more strength, better force production during workouts, and more endurance for cardio. Again, it's particularly impactful for people starting with lower baseline energy levels, helping them feel more capable and motivated. These peptides are really about boosting that fundamental energy production that underlies everything else.
This is fascinating. It really points towards this bigger idea, doesn't it? Taking very specific, proactive control over your own biology, your own health journey. So bringing it all together, what does this mean for the bigger picture of longevity and general health optimization?
It signifies a massive fundamental shift in how we can approach health if we choose to. Jay Campbell is very clear on this. He believes there are essentially two different forms of healthcare operating today. Understanding this distinction is key.
Two forms. Okay, what are they?
First, there's what he calls sick care. This is the traditional system most of us know. It's reactive. It focuses on diagnosing and treating illness after it occurs, managing symptoms.
Right. You get sick, you go to the doctor.
Exactly. And general practitioners, in this view, are primarily stewards of sick care and illness medicine. They're experts at treating disease, but they aren't typically trained, equipped, or even incentivized by the system to focus on optimizing health or maximizing longevity.
Their job isn't really preventing illness long term or making you superhuman.
Not really. If you asked your average family doctor how to live vibrantly to 120, they'd likely, not have a clear roadmap for that. It's just not the focus of the standard model. It's reactive.
Okay, so that's sick care. Mm-hmm. What's the alternative?
The alternative is optimization healthcare. This is a proactive path. It often involves stepping outside the standard insurance-based system, maybe paying cash for specialized care. It's about becoming, as Jay puts it, a proactive scientist of your own health.
Taking radical ownership.
Absolutely. It means actively seeking out doctors or specialists who focus on longevity medicine, preventative health optimization. It involves getting really deep, comprehensive lab work done regularly, not just the basic panels. Jay mentions doing extensive labs once or twice a year, maybe costing up to $2,000 to look at everything. Inflammatory markers, hormones, nutrients, genetic predispositions, metabolic health markers.
Yeah.
Getting under the hood.
Wow, deep data dives.
Yes. And then using that data to actively employ tools like therapeutic testosterone if needed, maybe growth hormone agonists like we discussed, GLP-1 peptides for metabolic health, mitochondrial optimizers, targeted supplements, all aimed at actively improving health markers and lowering your biological age, regardless of your chronological age. It's prescriptive and preventative, not just reactive.
So it's about actively building health, not just waiting to fix problems.
Precisely. And this proactive approach, combined with access to these powerful new tools like peptides, completely changes the game for potential lifespan and health span. Jay Campbell genuinely believes that people in their 40s, 50s, early 60s today, if they commit to this optimization path, make the right choices consistently. They could realistically live vigorously well into their 120s, 130s, maybe even 150s, assuming they avoid, accidents.
150. Vigorously. Yeah. That's hard to even imagine.
It is compared to previous generations who just didn't have this knowledge or these tools. We might be the first generation with the potential to truly redefine aging and extend vibrant life dramatically.
But there are hurdles, right? Yeah. You mentioned mindset earlier.
Yes. A huge one is what Jay calls the brainwashed mindset. Many people still carry this ingrained belief that using tools like therapeutic testosterone or peptides is somehow cheating, unnatural, or inherently dangerous.
Yeah, you hear that a lot. The biohacking is risky narrative.
Exactly. And that mindset often stems from, frankly, a lack of education, decades of misinformation, especially around hormones, and being embedded in a cultural and medical system that profits more from managing chronic illness than from creating robust, lifelong health. It's a significant mental barrier that individuals interested in optimization need to consciously overcome to embrace these possibilities.
Okay, this is incredibly empowering information. It paints a picture of real control over health and aging. But it inevitably leads to the practical question.
Yeah.
For listeners who are intrigued, where do you even start? How do you access high-quality peptides safely? What should you look for in a source?
That is absolutely the critical next question, right? Because with this explosion of interest, the market is, well, a bit wild. Navigating it safely requires diligence. Jay Campbell's own company, BioLongevity Labs, is obviously positioned as a source dedicated to providing high-quality research-grade peptides. His stated goal is for it to become a trusted hub, like an Amazon for biohackers offering reliable products.
Okay, so that's one potential avenue. But what about educating yourself first?
Definitely the first step. Jay's website, jcampbell.com, is a huge resource. He mentions it gets significant traffic, like 64,000 unique visitors last month, making it a top global source for peptide info. Apparently, despite facing a lot of shadow banning on social media for years because of his views on things like testosterone, his team has managed to get over 100 articles ranking highly on Google for peptide-related searches. So lots of educational material there. His social handle is jcampbell333, where he talks peptides, hormones, but also consciousness, which he says is his main passion.
So educate yourself first. Then, when looking to potentially source peptides, what are the non-negotiables for quality and safety?
Right. This is paramount. Any reputable source must prioritize and be transparent about quality control. You absolutely need to look for vendors who can provide proof of GMP compliance, good manufacturing practices. These are strict industry standards ensuring products are made consistently and safely.
GMP compliance.
Got it.
What else?
Sterility processing is crucial, especially for injectables. You need assurance the product is free from bacteria or other contaminants, and ideally, they should be manufactured in FDA-registered and certified labs. Jay emphasizes that his company's products meet these standards, manufactured in U.S.-based labs in Philadelphia and Orlando. This commitment to quality is vital to avoid the risks associated with potentially low-purity ingredients or questionable manufacturing practices you might find elsewhere in the less regulated research chemical space, where origins can be murky.
So GMP, sterility, FDA-registered labs, anything else? Like testing.
Yes. Third-party testing is huge. Reputable companies should provide certificates of analysis, COAs, from independent labs verifying the purity and potency of their peptide batches. Don't just trust their internal claims, look for that external validation.
Okay, third-party COAs, that makes sense.
And in terms of product range, you'll find many companies offering a wide array of the common research peptides, both oral and injectable forms, covering most of what we've discussed. You might also see companies developing proprietary formulations. Jay mentions a few from his company, like BioGut Pro, an oral blend aimed at gut health, combining KPV, BPC, TB500, Tributarin, and PA, designed as a comprehensive kitchen sink approach to tackling gut issues quickly.
Interesting, a gut blend.
And Biomean, a newer nootropic blend containing DEXA, J147, that Alzheimer's drug candidate, and NooPEPT, aimed at boosting focus and mood without the jitters you get from stimulants.
Cognitive enhancement blend.
And Metashred. Described as a potent oral fat loss product, it combines a mitochondrial supplement, SLUPPP332, with BAM15, which is claimed to be a safer version of the metabolic uncoupler DNP, designed to increase thermogenesis, sweating, and workout intensity.
Okay, some advanced formulations emerging too.
Exactly. The key takeaway really is to do your homework. Empower yourself with knowledge first. Understand what you're considering putting into your body. Choose your sources very carefully based on transparent quality controls and testing. And remember, these are powerful biological modulators. They're best used intelligently as part of a holistic health strategy, ideally with guidance from a knowledgeable practitioner who understands longevity medicine and peptides, not just as standalone magic bullets. Hashtag tag 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 outro.
Wow, we have covered a lot of ground today, a true deep dive into the world of peptides. We went from the basic science, these tiny signaling molecules, through their surprisingly long, sometimes hidden history, all the way to their really incredible, almost science fiction-like potential in accelerating healing, optimizing physical and mental performance, and maybe, just maybe, radically extending our vibrant, healthy years. We saw how things like BPC 157 and TB500 could potentially slash injury recovery times by 7, 10, even 15 times, how they might offer real alternatives to invasive surgery for common soft tissue problems, and how this understanding can even reshape how we think about issues like hair loss. Maybe it's more about blood flow than we realized.
It really does connect back to a bigger picture, doesn't it? What stands out most, I think, is that shift in responsibility. The idea that you are empowered now more than ever to become that proactive scientist of your own health. Yeah. You can actively explore these optimization paths that, frankly, the traditional sick care system often overlooks or just isn't set up to support. The tools are becoming available, whether it's BPC-157 for healing, mitochondrial boosters like SS31 or MOTSC for energy, growth hormone agonists for anti-aging. The potential exists to move decisively beyond just treating illness. It's about actively pursuing optimal function, maybe even defying what we thought were the limits of aging.
Yeah. The future of personalized health, it feels like it's not just coming anymore. It's kind of already here, being driven by individuals, taking ownership, seeking out this kind of cutting-edge information, and making informed choices. The potential really is astounding. Okay, so for your final provocative thought to take away from this deep dive, if this trajectory continues, if we really do gain the tools and the knowledge to live vibrantly, healthily into our 120s, 130s, or beyond, what does that do? What impact will that kind of extended health span have on society as a whole, on our families, our careers, our relationships, on the very definition of what it means to live a full human life? And maybe more personally, how would you choose to live, knowing you potentially have decades more vibrant time than any generation before you? What would you do with those extra possibilities? Something to think about. That's all for this deep dive. Thank you so much for joining us. And just a reminder, this deep dive was brought to you by InfinityPeptide.com. We look forward to exploring another fascinating topic with you next time.